Hello, hello, hello. Welcome or welcome back to Fancy a Blather podcast, aka the cozy podcast of your dreams. This week we are chatting to one of my oldest and dearest friends, Maisie. We chat about all things ranging from our experience of growing up together, what it was like for Maisie when she moved from Perth to Perth, meaning that she moved from one side of the world to another. And we really delve into education and lots of different factors all about it, discussing like the importance of education, about colonialism and aboriginality and all things like that. And it's a great episode. So buckle up, grab your dressing gown and enjoy. Hello, welcome or welcome back. I know I already said that in the intro, but I felt the need to say it again. I'm so excited to be back talking to you guys. Episode 2 of the new rebrand. It's feeling good. It's feeling genuine. It's feeling real. I had so much fun recording this episode with Maisie, very much in real time. We recorded it yesterday. And when you're listening to it, it's Sunday and this comes out on Monday. So we recorded it on Saturday. So very much in real time. I must confess that I'm probably not sounding 110%. And yesterday, I definitely was not feeling 110%. It was my birthday. On Friday, I turned the big 2-6, and it was interesting. It was fun. I'm someone that loves my birthday, or like tries to love my birthday and make the best out of my birthday, because being a January baby, it is so hard for anyone else to make a big deal out of your birthday, that the only way you can actually enjoy it is by like being a control freak about it. And that is exactly what I do every year. I won't even lie. And I just think it's really important, especially in this day and age, to love yourself and celebrate yourself and be all for that. And I just think more people should do that. I don't know. I don't think that's anything to be ashamed of. Like, I'm alive. I'm still alive. That's great. That's incredible. And I'm celebrating that. And I'm celebrating the friendships I have and the family I have and the memories I have on this earth. And I don't know, I think it's important. And honestly, like, I love an excuse to get all my friends in one room and socialize. So it may also be a factor, but I also just think like everyone is so sad in January and it makes it so hard to like enjoy yourself. So I really have to bring it into my own hands to ensure that I have a good time. And I can report I most certainly did have a good time. Which is why on Saturday I was definitely feeling a little rough when Maisie and I recorded, but I think we both powered through and it was an incredible episode. So a little birthday recap for my life update. In fact, maybe I'll do my small wonder first. Oh no, I'm yawning. This is 2 days after, but I'm still in struggle city. I don't think I can hack this life anymore. My small wonder is silent friendship time. I've just had some really great silent friendship time with different friends recently, and it's been so nice. And I always forget like how underrated silent friendship time is, just being able to be in the same room and like do different things and be silent but still like appreciate each other's company. I don't know, I just love it. So birthday celebrations. Last weekend I went away for the weekend with two of my best friends and had the loveliest time. We went to just a little Airbnb near Lochleven, and it was really fun. And just cozy vibes in the best way possible. And we arrived there the Friday after a lot of redirection for me, because I don't know, I just like trusted Google Maps too much, and turns out I'm so sorry. It turns out I clicked the wrong places a couple times, but it's fine. We got there, whatever. We digress. Turns out even at 26, geography is not my strong point. And we got there the Friday night late, just hung out, played games. We played like a celebrity guess who I am game the Friday night, which was really fun. And then the Saturday, we literally didn't leave the Airbnb. It was raining all day, which honestly was kind of like a vibe. It was very much incredible. It was exactly what we wanted. We wanted a cozy weekend. So we just kind of lived in dressing gowns or hoodies or trackies or just like anything cozy. We ate in, like we bought a bunch of food on the Friday to take with us. We set the fire, watched some like TV, played more games together. We played We're Not Really Strangers, which was really fun and like interesting to play a different game with my friends. And went in the hot tub, which was one of the like reasons we booked the Airbnb, but we couldn't go in until the night because it rained, and apparently you can't go in the rain, which was kind of like crappy because otherwise I probably would have been in the hot tub most of the day. And then the Sunday we went to the Deer Park, which is literally is what it says on the tin. It's a park where you can like feed deer and stuff, and there's some other animals. And I went there like growing up, and I hadn't been there in a very long time. I used to go there as a kid all the time, but I haven't been there in ages. So that was cute. My friends fed some deer. I've had one deer with some of their food because I really just can't do like the animal saliva thing. It's just not for me. I'm sorry to people listening to this if you like are into that or like have a dog that does that, but like I don't want any animal licking me ever. It just makes me so, so uncomfortable. I even remember distinctively growing up, like my parents grabbing my hands and being like, keep it still, so that like, the deer could come and eat off of it. And I was just so not for it. And I would always just throw the food into the field. I did feed one deer. It was the nicest deer ever. It was just so cute and friendly. And it was a perfect eater. It didn't really lick my hand at all. It just ate the food perfectly. And it didn't have like a money mouth or anything. So it's all for that. But that was all I needed to fill my heart. I prefer to just look at them. I don't know, it's just who I am. And then we ate there, had a really yummy lunch there. I had a crepe before that and went on the Flying Fox, the best thing ever invented. I can report though, I didn't like push any children out of the way. There were no children around when I went on the Flying Fox. However, if there had been children around, I would have just waited for them to leave and then got on it. Because you will never stop this girl from going on the Flying Fox. I'm obsessed. That was like my favorite thing at the park growing up. My gran used to have one like opposite her house, and I'd be on it for hours on end. I had a crepe, and then I had a really nice lunch of soup and this incredible cheese and chive scone. Very wholesome vibes, very lovely time, and then came back, obviously. Worked. And then on my birthday on Friday, I had the cutest time ever. I was working in the morning. It's just half day Fridays at schools here, and it was so wholesome. The kids were adorable. I have a lovely little class just now. They're all about like seven or eight. Yeah, most of them are seven, and they were so cute. One like little girl made me the most adorable bracelet with my initials on it, and I am absolutely obsessed. Got like flowers from another kid, chocolates. One of them brought in like a birthday banner from home to put on the window, which obviously took back home with her afterwards. It was just so cute. We had a little dance party, very wholesome vibes. And then I went for lunch with two of the girls from work, which was so lovely. Just lovely little bistro. I had mussels and then panna cotta. And then what else did I do? Oh, and then like the appointments began. So I was like glamming up this birthday, which is hilarious considering that I ended up literally just staying in my flat the whole time. But it's fine. Sometimes it's just nice to feel like bougie. So I got my hair done, and then I went to Stockbridge and I got my makeup done, and that was all fabulous and great. And then I went back for my flat. Oh my God. Back to my flat with my two friends. One of my friends arrived and the other one was now then with me, who were staying the night, one of them being Maisie. And that was so lovely to see them both. And we went for dinner, like the three of us plus my other best friend. And we had a dinner at this hotel in Edinburgh, which was like okay, but I thought it was going to be like a French restaurant, but they didn't really have any French dishes. But it was pretty nice. It was just pretty slow service. But I had a really nice like starter. It was like this Japanese chicken thing. And then I treated myself to a steak for main course, which was incredible. And I had a really nice like rhubarb kind of gin cocktail. And then we headed back to party the night away. And then, well, I keep yawning because we really did party the night away, so I'm so sorry for yawning so many times. I had so much fun. I just had like some friends around for a flat party. It was blue themed because, fun fact, I was born on Blue Monday, So like in 1997, the 20th of January was Blue Monday, statistically the most depressing day of the year. So I thought I'd poke fun at that and have like a blue themed party, wear like these blue trousers. It was a fun time. And yeah, it was a late night for sure. Like, I don't really do that anymore. Like, I haven't really been out in forever or been like out past even New Year. I think I got home at like 1:30. It was not late at all. And I was up till 6 a.m. by the time I like actually went to bed. Everyone probably left like 5:30, which is insane. And I realized yesterday that I was up for 24 hours on my birthday because I woke up at 6 for work. And I just have to say, like, who do I think I am? Like, I'm still so tired and it's 48 hours later. I just like cannot hack this life anymore. I am too old for this. I'm tapping out, but I had so much fun, and my parents and my brother came into town today. So obviously after my birthday, we recorded the podcast, and then I literally slept the rest of the weekend, essentially, and tried to like clean and from the party and like do work for this week. I was supposed to have like other social things, but I just like couldn't bring myself to get out of bed, if I'm totally honest. I was really in struggle city. And I have to say though, like, minus the tiredness, my hangover was really not that bad, which I was very happy about, because I feel like ever since 25, my hangovers have always been bad. So I obviously paced the alcohol quite well, which is nice. And then, yeah, my parents and my brother came into town today, and we went to a restaurant called Muscle Inn, I think, on Rose Street for dinner. And it was really good, actually. I had this seafood platter, which was delicious, incredible. We're a big seafood family. I had like some kind of smoked salmon thing for main, and we had white wine to share at the table. It was lovely. It was a very nice time. Nice to like have some family time. And yeah, that's kind of the life updates, because that's been like my whole life recently. Because other than that, since we last recorded, I've just been working and trying to like get stuff done so I can enjoy this weekend, which I very much did. So yeah, it's exciting. I'm now 26. It's a weird time. I always find birthdays like weird. I don't know, like, I love my birthday and I have so much fun, but always feel kind of like weird after them or like during them, because I'm like, damn, like, it's just like it really makes you reflect a lot. I think because you're like, wow, I've been on the earth for like exactly 26 years and I was born like on this day, and then you like kind of get like all existential crisis with it, and you're like, what have I done with my life in those years, and like, how many years do I have left, and what does the rest of my life look like, and what do I want it to look like? And you just kind of get overwhelmed and like, I don't know, overthink and stuff, and you just kind of look back on previous birthdays as well and are like, whoa, like, things are so different, but not necessarily in a bad way, like, they're just different. And I don't know, it's kind of weird, because I like look back on it and like, I had the best birthday ever and I had so much fun with my friends that I saw, and I got like lovely messages from friends I didn't see. But it's so weird, because like growing up, I feel like it was such a like popularity contest on your birthday to be like, oh my god, I want to get like the most Facebook posts, or I want to get the most like Instagram tags or whatever like BS it was. And now I've just come to value like the power of like someone wishing you a happy birthday in person and like hanging out and being with you in person. I don't know, I just feel like there was such a like superficiality to birthdays growing up a lot of the time, like especially in the age of social media that we live in. And I used to be like obsessive about like Instagram comments and stuff like that, and now like, I don't know, I'm just not really like that anymore, but I still definitely do feel it like creeping in sometimes, because it's that like intrusive thought, you know, that I'm very much like working through, like 26 of the year of therapy big time. Shout out to my therapist. And it's just like an interesting concept, and I do think it makes you like really be like, okay, like, I'm so grateful for these people in my life, and it's so incredible I have these people in my life, but it also makes you like, shit, like, I remember when I had like different people in my life, and like, now they're not in my life. And particularly not really like with friendships ending and stuff, like, I think like life goes on and like people move and you get new friends and things like that. We're just like grieving, right? I find like that's kind of hard, is the whole like, I had these family members that I was close to that were really like around and there for my birthday and celebrate it big with me, and like I would get a gift from them and things like that, and like your birthday is not about gifts, but it's just kind of like that weird thing of like, you
one of those times where you really do notice like that they're not there, even though it's been like years potentially. But I feel like it's one of those moments where it comes back more. And I find January to be kind of a hard time to be like happy for my birthday, even though like I love my birthday and I want to be happy, because everyone else is just like so sad and it's hard to like not have that rub off on you. And I very much like play off of other people's energies in life, so I find that like quite difficult, because I really do like January as a month, and I try to think of it as a month of like a refresh, and like it is darker and it's colder and stuff, so it's the perfect opportunity to like let your body rest and accept rest and like give in to rest and love rest, which is hilarious considering I was just up for 24 hours on my birthday. But you know what I'm saying? And I think it's hard though not to be impacted by the energies around you. And I don't know why, but like so many people just like are Debbie Downers in January. And I get it, like everyone has their own stuff going on. But I'm also like so grateful for my friends that are always there for me on my birthday and always like show up and support and are like happy to be there and don't like bring me down, because that is so hard, because I feel like I have definitely had many people in my life who like have just kind of drained my energy in multiple ways, but particularly like around my birthday. And I, not even because there was things necessarily going on in their life, just because like they aren't a January person, which I get, but like it was like they couldn't even like bring themselves together to even like figure out a way to attend something for my birthday, which was like a hard pill to swallow growing up, because like there was so many excuses that people would have as a January baby for your birthday of like why they couldn't make it and things like that. And now I'm just realizing like it's important to value who's there and not think about like who's not there. And yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. It's taken me like, I wouldn't say I just like realized it this year. I think it's like an ongoing realization. Probably realized it like in the pandemic or something, but like it is kind of ridiculous taking me like 26 years to recognize that. But also like it's because of the way that things are portrayed in the media and in society. Like I feel like people have these big like surprise parties and all these TV shows and they have like 300 people there and it's just like so unrealistic. So I don't know, I just think like I'd rather have, and I've always said this, but I don't think I've always believed it, I'd rather have like less friends. Not that I have like I don't have like no friends, like I have like quite a lot of friends all things considered. Like I am a social person. I'm not trying to like brag on myself right now, which is very much what it sounds like, but it's taken me a long time to believe that I would rather have less friends that are closer than loads of friends and not have like really close relationships with anyone. Does that make sense? Like I feel like I'm just babbling now. I need to just stop. This is what happens when I'm tired. I should really go to sleep anyway. It's late and I have work tomorrow. Anyway, so those are the updates. That's where my brain's at, I guess, in life. Let's keep going. So Gem of the City. Recently, I have fallen in love with this little brunch style restaurant. To be fair, they might do like dinner and lunch and stuff. I've only been there for brunch though, called Scran. It's like North Bridge area. I'm obsessed. I've been twice so far, but I can't wait to go like a million more times. I have had like the yummiest food there. I had the most incredible special milkshake they were doing, sorry to my IBS, that was like Biscoff and white chocolate when I had friends in town in December. It was so delicious. And their food is just killer. The atmosphere is amazing. It gives me like cozy energy. It's like reasonable prices for Edinburgh, and I feel like the service is really quick, and they're all, the service staff are always like really lovely, and I also have like the nicest time. So that is my gem in the city right now. So like highly recommend you check it out, and like stay tuned on the TikTok for me to like post a little video all about Scran and give you all the best things on the menu in my opinion. So yeah, and that our TikTok's just at Fancy Blether. Okay, so for the poem of the week, I thought we would delve into a birthday poem. Naturally, it felt very fitting. There was some like other poems that I was thinking about, but they were all just kind of depressing, and I wanted like a bittersweet thing, but I couldn't find that. And then I was like, you know what? Everyone needs a laugh in January. Like, we don't need depressing poetry in January. So then I was like, let's find like a fun poem instead. So this poem is on the Poetry Foundation, one of my favorite websites, just thepoetryfoundation.org. And the poem is called Birthday Lights by Caleb Brown, and like I'll link it in the show notes so you can check it out and check out his profile. So here goes. Birthday Lights by Caleb Brown. Light bulbs on a birthday cake. What a difference that would make. Plug it in and make a wish, then relax and flip a switch. No more smoke or waxy mess to bother any birthday guest. But Grandpa says, it's not the same. Where's the magic? Where's the flame? To get your wish without a doubt, you need to blow some candles out. Oh, I love this poem so much. That's Birthday Lights by Caleb Brown. So before we hop into the episode with Maisie, which I'm so excited, which I'm so excited for you all to listen to. You're all going to fall in love with it. I wanted to let you know my Curian essential. Recently, I've been currying in all the time with my dressing gown. It's an oldie but a goldie. I love my dressing gown. I'm pretty sure mine is like multiple years old, but it's from M&S. And it's like blue with white polka dots on it. I'm obsessed with it. It is the comfiest, coziest thing ever. And I practically live in it. So if you don't have a dressing gown, honestly, I'm not really sure what you're doing with your life at this point, because like I don't know, that's kind of like weird behavior. Like I don't know anyone that doesn't own a dressing gown. But if you feel like your dressing gown is underused, it is time to change that. It will upgrade your life so drastically. Every time I come home, the first thing I do before I had nudie, because now it kind of like fluctuates. Well, I have like a knockoff nudie, kind of like fluctuates between the two, but like I will take off my clothes and put on my dressing gown, like without a doubt. It's just what has to happen. I'm going out somewhere, I'll wear my dressing gown until I leave. At my birthday party, I literally was wearing my dressing gown when people arrived, even though like I had a nice outfit underneath, because I just love it. Okay, so if you don't have one, get one. If you have one, show it some love, because that is what we are currying in with right now. Hello, I am just hopping in here for our charity of the week. Naturally, for charity of the week this week, I wanted to think of something that's like really close and pure to my heart, because it is like technically my birthday episode. So I wanted to make sure it was something that like really, like all the charities obviously like resonate with me, but I wanted it to be something that like really made sense for like my brand, I guess. So I picked the charity Edinburgh's Children's Hospital Charity. I'm sure that most of you know that, or all of you know, I would presume if you listen to the podcast this far, that I'm a primary school teacher as my full-time job. And as a result, obviously, I adore children. I think they're like the most pure, wonderful beings placed on the earth. And I'm so grateful that I get to spend 5 days a week with them. And yeah, I don't know. They're just like, I just think they matter so much. And I think that having a children's hospital is so important, so crucial. And I think like the impact being in hospital can have on a child is so, it will be so memorable in their experience. It's important that they get the treatment that they deserve in like multiple ways, not just in like terms of like for the health of their body, but also like the health of their mind and their well-being. So Edinburgh's Children's Hospital Charity has the vision of child first, patient second, and that is at the heart of everything they do. And they believe that nothing should get in the way of being a child, which I think is just such an important thing to remember. I think I am very fortunate. I was not very ill as a child. And I think that being so unwell as a child can really have such an impact on your life. And it's so important that these children still get to have the childhood that everyone else is given and blessed with. So yeah, absolutely, please do go and check them out. So their website is just echcharity.org, and there you can find out more about what they do, who they are. You can get involved in multiple ways, whether that's like sharing your story, fundraising, donating, volunteering, finding out about different events going on, perhaps like setting up a corporate partnership, leaving a gift in your will, getting involved in like philanthropy. And they also have a shop that you can check out if you'd like to support them that way. but it is currently closed right now, but I think it will be opening again soon. So yeah, like I said, it is ECHC. Oh, sorry, echcharity.org. So go ahead and check them out. Hello, Maisie, and welcome to Fancy a Better Podcast. How are you today?
Hello, I am good. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. I feel like we should start off this by like explaining how we know each other and like introduce yourself a little bit. Like, what do you do? What are you about? Kind of thing.
Well, we kind of grew up together because we lived in the same village when we were kids, and my mum was actually your childminder, so you spent a lot of time at my house when we were did. Little. And then when we were in school together, we had like a few years age gap between us, so we weren't ever in the same class, but we still organized a lot of things together. We did an art fair every couple of years for charity. I still don't know how we got away with that, but we did it.
Selfless individuals.
And then when I was 9, I moved to Australia with my family, so we hadn't seen each other for quite a long time, but coming back every couple of years to see my friends and family again, so we just stayed in touch through that. And now I'm back in Scotland kind of long term, so
nice. Wait, so let's like rewind. So you moved when you were 9. Mm-hmm. What was that like? Do you remember it? Like, do you remember move? Because obviously, like, I don't know, I feel like that's an age where you do remember some things, but it's probably like a little bit blurry. Like, what do you remember about it?
I actually remember it super, super clearly, because I really didn't want to move to Australia. Like, I was super against it, I think, because I had really strong roots here with, like, my family and my grandparents and, my like, all my friends I was really close with. I remember very much, like, when we moved over, I, like, made it a point to, like, refuse to enjoy anything about Australia. Like, I didn't like going to the beach and I didn't like the sun and everything. And it took a while for me to be like, okay, it's actually really amazing here. But I was really stubborn in the beginning.
How does, like, even the logistics of that work, like, moving from here to Australia? It's obviously, like, a crazy long flight and stuff. Like, do you take any belongings with you, or do you, like, do your parents sell everything and, like, buy most things there? Or, like, how did that work?
Well, my parents actually did take basically everything that they owned over there. But I think if they were to do it again now, they wouldn't do it that way. They would probably sell everything here. And then I knew when we moved over. Because what happened is all of our furniture and everything that we shipped over, it came, like, by boat on shipping containers. And it took a really long time. I can't remember exactly how long, but I remember we were, like, in a rental and we still didn't have any furniture. And we were just waiting for things to arrive. So we just had, like, mattresses on the floor and things like that for a while. And so I think if they were going to do, like, a giant move like that again, they probably would just get rid of everything and just sort out new things, even if it was secondhand and things like that when you get to the new country.
Yeah, that's pretty that is crazy. That is a long way to travel with, like, furniture and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, moving, like, starting at the new school? Because obviously before then you'd been at the same primary school, like, the whole time, so you hadn't really been, like, the new kid, because we all started, like, you started primary one at the same time as everyone else. Do you remember that experience of, like, being the new kid in the school?
Yeah, and it was kind of hard, because when I was a kid, like, obviously I had a really strong Scottish accent, and I used to talk really, really quickly as well, and I had a bit of a lisp, so I think the Australian kids just fully could not understand me half of the time. Like, when I was trying to talk to them, I would just get these, like, blank looks sometimes. Because I'd never had to, like, really make friends as a kid living in Scotland, because I just had friends, like, for as long as I could remember. I had, like, you know, the people that I'd always kind of been around. And then all of a sudden I was, like, in this new country, and I had to kind of actually, like, work on, like, making people like me and getting to know people. And I did find it pretty hard, to be honest. I guess my accent just sort of faded over time, and I did make, like, some really wonderful friends over there.
Nice. And you were saying before that when you first got there, you were, like, determined not to enjoy it. So how did you kind of start to enjoy it? Like, do you remember the moment, or, like, certain moments where you were like, oh, actually, maybe, like, this is not so bad?
I don't think I had, like, a lightning kind of moment. I think, like, even, like, years after we moved there, like, when I was a teenager, I still had this feeling of, like, wanting to be back in Scotland and kind of, like, wishing that I hadn't had to, like, leave all my friends and family behind and stuff. But I think, like, even when I was a kid and we first moved over, I was always really into, like, the ocean and swimming and trying to surf and things like that. So I think that was one of the main things that kind of, like, grounded me and made me feel, like, happy there, was that we were always by the beach and
Even like right up until me leaving back in May, I was always at the beach if I could be. So
nice. What would you say were like the biggest cultural differences, or even like even now, like obviously because now you've kind of been back and forth, what are the big, because obviously we all speak the same language, but obviously like you were saying the accents are different, mm-hmm. but what are the other, like obviously the weather is very different, but what are the other like cultural things that you noticed like over time?
Well, it's actually like a really difficult one. I'm trying to think. All I can think, I feel like Australian people swear a lot more.
Oh, really?
I think so.
That's interesting. I feel like Scottish people swear a lot.
But then, yeah, I do feel like Scottish people swear a lot as well, actually. So maybe that's not true. Maybe it's about equal. To be fair as well, where I live in Western Australia, I think it's got like one of the highest like British people populations. And it is.
Okay, so it's quite similar.
Yeah. But it's also really diverse and multicultural, like I think a lot more than where I lived here in Scotland.
Yeah.
It's such a small town. Whereas where I moved to in Australia, I went from this primary school in Scotland that had like 100 kids maybe to this primary school that had like 700 kids and an additional needs centre like attached to it. So it was like lots and lots of different kids and then kids with different needs and things like that.
Yeah.
And so I think probably like the diversity and the multiculturalism is like something that stands out to me. I just feel like it's a very, very diverse place to live and grow up.
Yeah, definitely. Because I also think like there's also the added kind of thing of like obviously the history of Australia being like a colony and things like that. And then you have like Aboriginals, whereas like in Scotland, that doesn't exist. Like there isn't. Obviously, there is people that lived here before, like we were part of Britain and stuff like that. But because we were never a colony, like there's not really like indigenous people to Scotland because they're still living in Scotland now, you know, and they're still respected in Scotland.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of education on that in school? Was there any kind of, did they talk about like Aboriginal things? Was like the culture part of like your education, or was it kind of like something that wasn't spoken about a lot, or what was that kind of like?
This is something that I'm actually like super passionate about, like as a like future teacher as well.
Yeah.
Because I think like we did learn in primary school like bits about like Aboriginal culture and mm-hmm. history, but not really enough, I would say, and not really like it wasn't done well enough. Like I think if I look back, a lot of it kind of comes across as kind of tokenistic and like not actually mm-hmm. meaningful learning, which is such a shame because like Aboriginal cultures and histories are just like so rich and so diverse. Like within Australia, there was over 200 Indigenous nations. Like mm-hmm. it was kind of like it wasn't one country; it was more like Europe, where it's made of like heaps of different mm-hmm. countries and different people and languages.
Like all the different tribes.
Yeah, yeah. And they had so much like, I mean, obviously it's like the oldest living culture and they just had so much like knowledge and understanding of the country and things like that. And there's so many ways that we can like incorporate that into education. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important. But it wasn't until I was in university and I was studying, I had to do a unit on like indigenous cultures and histories as part of my teaching degree. And looking at like really looking in detail, like how they were treated when like white people kind of came over mm-hmm. and colonized the country. It was just like so horrendous. That was really the first time that I was like properly learning about it. And I think like, obviously, you know, there's only so much that you can kind of like teach to children, but I think mm-hmm. in high school, you know, we should definitely have been looking at that in more detail.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because I feel like that's the thing with like being here and teaching, obviously like I teach as well, and the thing with like, which is quite funny that like how we both ended up doing that, but being here, there's kind of no talk ever, like growing, obviously because I ended up being at school all the way through in this country. I've never moved, like I have lived other countries, but I spent like all 13 years in the school system here, and like there was I never remember learning about colonialism. I never remember learning about like all these things. And I think like there's a big like problem in Britain for that, because it's like, because we are the problem, right? So it's like, well, we don't want to talk about our bad history, we'll just like sweep that under the carpet and we'll just like not mention it. And like if we talk about, I remember in high school distinctively remembering in history, like higher history, so it was like quite like it's kind of like the second last year you're at school mm-hmm. learning, so you're like 16, you're capable of learning like more intense things. And I remember specifically learning about the civil rights movement in America.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so interesting, because then obviously as I got older, I started to look more into like racism in this country and like civil rights here. And like there was a civil rights movement in Britain,
mm-hmm.
but we never spoke about it at school. And I was like, that's so crazy. The only kind of Scottish
based history that we ever did, but they somehow missed colonialism out of it, was when they spoke about like immigrants and exiles, which was really interesting because they were talking about like the Highland clearances in that time period and like the potato famine in Ireland, and that's actually super relevant to colonialism, that all kind of that's all the same time period. And I don't think like that's an excuse, but I think that makes it more complex in terms of why the different countries were involved in the situations, and like the way that perhaps like people who were Picts or like lived in the Highlands up north, like the impact it had on their culture and the impact that's still happening on our culture today in terms of like Gaelic not really being recognized fully as a language until more recently. Like my gran was grew up in the Highlands and she was told never to speak Gaelic because it was kind of frowned upon, and her parents could both speak it but they refused to teach her it because it was like, oh, if you speak this it'll look really bad and you won't get hired and things like that. It's just so interesting. There was like a stripping of culture as well, but it was done in like a more like subtle way, I suppose, because it wasn't like there was never like a big, obviously there was big battles in the past, but like at that point there wasn't like a big thing. It just kind of happened because it was like one royal was like, oh yeah, we'll join you, and I was saying, don't remember there ever being like, there wasn't like a public vote like should we join Britain and all this stuff. So I think that's interesting. But for me it was when I moved to Canada for one semester abroad at uni. So at this point I'm like turning 21, and I obviously at this point knew what colonialism was just through like being in the real world, but I didn't really know a lot about it, and there had never been much of a discussion about it. And this is 3 years into like my English literature degree, and I decided to take a post-colonial literature class in Canada, and that for me was like a really eye-opening moment, because being in Canada and having that was such an interesting like discourse, because obviously I had never been in a country where they had like Indigenous people and where that was the discussion. And I was like, God, like, this is crazy. Like, why is this not something that we're like more aware of in our culture? Because it's so prevalent still in the world today, is like everything that's happened since colonialism. I mean, there is still literally colonies. So it's still happening. And I just think it's so crazy that there was never any discussion on it or anything like that. And it was so interesting for me, like being able to read like books that were speaking about this, different themes and things like that. And it's something I've like tried to bring in a lot more when I do discuss things like with my class. I try to be like more like big picture and be like, well, let's be honest about like who our country were, who we are. And obviously it's not like, I think that's the thing in Britain is people are like, oh, well, we can't talk about that, as in like the society, like we can't talk about that because that makes us look bad or that's embarrassing and all this stuff. But I'm like, but like you also have to accept that that's just the way it was. And like I don't think these people want your guilt. They just want like they just want to be like seen. And also I feel like there's so much more of a discussion that could be happening here that just doesn't happen. I suppose it's a lot more complex as well because the royal family are still very much like a lot, well, obviously not all of them, but like they're still very much alive and around in our culture and cemented in our culture in a way that I don't know that any other country is, but it's like the Queen is still technically the Queen of Australia. No, that's so weird. Well, no, she's not the King. The King is still just like so weird.
Yeah.
It's still like the King of Australia. And I'm like, that's just like, I don't get it. Like it's the 21st century. So it's like a really interesting concept. How did you get into teaching? Had you always kind of wanted to teach? Was that something that kind of came around naturally? Was it something that you like pivoted to? Like what was that journey like?
Well, I didn't initially go into teaching. When I started at uni, I was doing a film and screenwriting degree, which I did enjoy and I thought it was fun, but I only kind of went at that for a year, and then I decided that it wasn't really what I wanted to do. And I think probably part of that is because like my mum's always worked in education, and she's always said to me, like, you know, you'll be a teacher and you'll end up kind of doing the same thing as me. And I think I was just like being stubborn in a way. I was just like, no, I'll choose my own destiny. But I do think I was just always meant to work with kids. And it was actually, I was working in a McDonald's. That was my first job. And I managed to wrangle it that I held like a kids club every weekend. And every Saturday morning, these kids would come in and we would do like arts and craft and just play activities and stuff. But it was really nice. And we had like regulars, basically. Like there were these kids that would come in and
Was it like a free weekend thing?
Yeah, it was free. Amazing. Kind of to like build a bit of a sense of community. And it was really good. And there was actually this one little boy, I would have been 18 or 19 at this point, but like one of the terms and conditions of me having this kids club is that I had to kind of do like, you know, like themes and stuff for like whatever was happening. And it was coming up to Australia Day, which is January 26th, which I really do not celebrate at all now. But basically Australia Day on the 26th of January, that's when Australia was colonized. So it's been for Indigenous people for like hundreds of years, it's been known as kind of like a real day of mourning and a really, like, yeah, really sad day, because of all the pain and everything that followed that happening. But there are groups of people who are very like firm on Australia Day being like something to celebrate, but really it's just an excuse for people to basically get drunk and
yeah,
not really think about what they're celebrating so much. Anyway, but at the time I did like make these like Australia themed activities for the day. And something I didn't even think about, like I printed out just as a little colouring in activity, like Australian flags. And one of the little boys that came in, he was Aboriginal. And he coloured in the flag and then he turned it over and he drew like the Aboriginal flag on the back of it. And I hadn't even thought, like looking back at, I mean, I was very young at the time as well, but I just hadn't even thought like it's Australia Day and I'm literally just celebrating, like, well, giving them the opportunity to celebrate like the widest version of this. And I had these kids that would come every week, and I hadn't even thought about, you know, what that day means to them and their culture. And
yeah.
So that was like a really eye-opening moment. But yeah, I love doing that kids club. And I think that's why that was kind of like part of it that made me realize I wanted to work with kids all the time. But, you know, those kids in particular, that little boy and his sister, I think are why I feel so passionate about Indigenous education and sharing like cultures and histories. I think when we don't have education about those kind of things, it just lets people be ignorant. And when people are ignorant, it's so easy to, you know, just believe, you know, stereotypes and fall into prejudices and things like that. So I think like educating people is so important to stop that kind of like racist cycle going on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think so. I think education is such like a fundamental tool to have in the world that's kind of like so misused so often in terms of like the history books that you used to see and things like that. It's all now, it's like interesting to look back and be like, who was the author of that? Like, what, whose perspective was that? But no, that's I actually, that was also someone who, like, they say, people would always say, oh, you'll be a teacher when you're older, you'll do that. And I remember being like, no. And it's just because I didn't like being told what I was going to do with my life. It was literally that stubborn thing. Yeah. The same when, like, my parents asked me to wash the dishes. And I'm like, I was going to do it. But now that you've asked me.
I don't want to.
And that's like, that's a terrible way to be. Yeah. That's exactly how I feel. But no, that's such an interesting thing. So then, is there kind of like in teaching something in particular, like is there a particular group of children that you're keen to work with, or like schools that you're keen to work in, or just kind of like teaching in general?
I mean, I do seem to gravitate, like when I've been on practicum placements and when I was working in a school last year, I do seem to like gravitate towards kids who have additional needs, usually kind of like social and emotional needs that aren't being met, because I just really feel for them and I think they're really misunderstood sometimes. Just like a quick little story, like on my first prac placement or my second one maybe, there was this young kid and he would have been like 8 or 9 and he had really high emotional needs and like anger management issues. And I feel like he'd already been written off by the teachers in the school, that he was just like really like troublesome, and just like, you know, like he was just like a problem kid because he would have these meltdowns and outbursts. And we were making fairy bread, which is, do you know what fairy bread is?
Yeah, I think it's the one with the sprinkles.
Yeah. So it's white bread with a lot of butter and a lot of sprinkles, or hundreds and thousands. And so the kids have been learning how to write like instructions. And one of the instructions that they did was a recipe to make fairy bread. And then they were following their own recipes to make fairy bread. And so I was going around, my job was to actually butter the bread for them because the teachers didn't want them to have the knives. And as I was going around, this kid and I started talking and I was buttering the bread of the kid next to him. And while I was talking to him and we were having a really nice conversation, I accidentally like completely bypassed him and didn't do his bread and moved on to the next kid. Like, would never do that on purpose. It was just, I think, because we were talking, I felt like I'd already done it.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, I was already like 5 kids down the row and someone was like, oh, miss, you didn't do his bread. And I looked at him and he was like hands like balled up into fists and like completely red in the face and like tears in his eyes and like shaking, like he was so, so upset. And I like just felt awful, and I went over to him and I just like knelt down and got to his like eye level and just said like, I'm so sorry, like I really didn't do that on purpose. And I explained like why I had done it, I think because we were talking and I just felt like
bad.
And literally that was all it took. I just apologized to him and I explained myself, and I, you know, didn't act like he was overreacting or anything like that. And he de-escalated and he came right down and it was fine. And later on, at the end of the day, I was telling my mentor teacher about it, and I said like I felt so bad, and I explained it to her. And she kind of just rolled her eyes and she was like, oh man, like don't even give him like the time of day sort of thing. Like don't as if I was, you know, too soft on him because I apologize and, you know, explain myself. And I think that is actually another cultural difference. I think in Australia, they're a lot more like, you'll be right kind of thing with the kids. Like if kids kind of fall over.
Yeah.
I think from what I remember, Jesus Christ. I think from what I remember, like growing up here, I think the teachers were very like gentle and kind of, you know, but I think in Australia it is a lot more, you know, about, I think the idea is like to build resilience, but I do think resilience, you need emotional support for that.
Yeah, exactly. Building resilience is like, it's something you learn.
Yeah.
And it does take time. And like, for instance, like I had a poetry competition recently with my kids and one of them didn't win. And obviously like that's a hard pill to swallow.
Uh-huh.
And they've all worked so hard, but in life, like only one person wins a competition.
Yeah.
But it's not like I was like, oh, well, you'll be fine. When she was upset about it, I spoke to her and I was like, look, you did an incredible job.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of everything you've done and you should be so proud of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, like this time you didn't win, you might win next time. But I wasn't coming to her like, well, you'll be fine. Not gonna talk to you. Like, yeah. I think it's about that reassuring and then giving them the space, because I do think they also do need the space to be like, I just need a minute to compose myself. And I get that. I feel the same way. Like if somebody's like, gives me bad news and then they're like, well, are you okay? I'm like, you just told me something crap. Like give me 5 minutes to pull myself together.
Yeah.
So I think that's such a good point. And I do think though, even here though, I think there's so many children who are just misunderstood.
Yeah.
And I think it's like people just don't have, and it sounds terrible, but in some ways I try my best, obviously, not to misunderstand people whenever possible and to resolve it whenever possible. But one of the big issues is that there almost isn't the time sometimes, which sounds awful. But when you've got a class of 30 kids, sometimes it's like you don't realize what's happened.
Uh-huh.
And whenever you can, you rectify it. But I do think sometimes that slips through the cracks because you're not, there's not enough resources or enough people available.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, because I even know some kids I've worked with who are just misunderstood, but I think it's really interesting because I think as like a generalization, but I think as like a generational thing, we're a lot more willing to be wrong than like the generations before us. Mm-hmm. Like I don't have a problem with being wrong. I don't have a problem with being uncomfortable. And I do find some people that I've worked with in the past, not everyone, but like I would say is typically people that are older than me that I've worked with in the past that really struggle with being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they kind of knew they were wrong, they're like, ah, well, it doesn't matter. Whereas if I do something and I'm like, oh my God, what was I doing? Like I literally did something where I'd taken like a piece of curriculum stuff from this site that we use to do with my class, but it was in English year groups and I'd gotten confused of like what their year group equals to my year group.
Uh-huh.
And we'd accidentally done the one like the year group above us.
Uh-huh.
And to be fair, my class did pretty well considering. Yeah. And I was thinking, God, this seems quite tricky. Like, why would they be learning this? But at this point, I was like, oh, maybe it's just me. And then I went back and looked the next day and I was like, oh God, it's the wrong year group. It's the one above them. So I went in the next day and I said to them, don't worry if you didn't understand that yesterday.
Yeah.
If you did, absolutely amazing. Or even if you just understood some of it, that's amazing. But you actually don't learn that until next year. Yeah. I was like, that's my fault. I looked at the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. But well done for sticking with it and for trying and being part of that challenge. But like, I will hold my hands up and say, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
We've done something way more challenging than it should have been. And I think for them, that was a really nice moment because they were like, oh, it's like okay to be wrong and it's okay
it's
to make
so
mistakes.
For them to see like adults be able to take accountability and apologize. And a lot of them probably actually won't get that from their parents.
Absolutely.
So I think for teachers, like being able to say sorry and admit when they were wrong or they made a mistake and just, you know, be human with them, I think that's
I think it makes such a massive difference. I think it's also just like being able to see that adults make mistakes is so important as well, because mm-hmm. it lets them feel like, oh, I can make a mistake. It's not wrong for me to do that, because otherwise they kind of feel like they've got to live up to this expectation. Yeah. And then that's so much pressure to even put on an adult, never mind a child. So I think that's so interesting. Mm-hmm. When you started like coming back, what was that like? What was it like the first time you came back? What was that experience of like visiting back to like the place obviously that you'd lived for the first 9 years of your life? And then obviously the clock keeps ticking even when you're away. So I can imagine like it must have been quite weird to be back in the same place.
Yeah, it is strange. I mean, like when I came back the first time, I think I was 14 years old, and I flew back by myself because my parents and my brothers at the time weren't really interested in coming back.
Yeah.
And so it was just something that I did, and I just flew over. So that was a pretty big thing to do, because it's about 24 hours of travel by myself. And then, yeah, being back in the village where I grew up and going to mm-hmm. see my old house. That was weird. And I think at the time I was still struggling a bit with homesickness and not really knowing like where I belonged and where I wanted to be. I hadn't like fully settled into Australia even then, 5 years later. I think it was a really good thing for me to do, because it made me realize like it's not impossible. Like I can still see the people that I care about, like my friends and my family. Like it's not impossible to like, you know, stay in contact with them and visit them. But I think it probably was like kind of confusing as well, because it was just like, I don't know. I think I really, really enjoyed being here on that trip, and probably made it a little bit harder
to go home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you kind of feel like it almost is a bit of an identity thing, like an identity crisis thing, where it's like you don't know which one? Obviously both are part of your identity, but you do kind of, especially when you're younger, feel the need to kind of fit yourself into a box so you fit in with everyone else? And do you feel like being between the two places and not knowing which one was kind of like hard to be like, oh, I don't know if like I want to be, do I belong here or do I belong there? Do you think that was like something that was hard for you, like with identity as well?
I'm not too sure. Like I would say that was really a big part of it when I was younger. And actually, mm-hmm. I really enjoy now that I'm older, like having the dual citizenship of being Scottish and Australian. And I really switch it up as well, like depending on where I am. Like I was working on the Isle of Skye a few months ago, and every time we had like American guests come in, I would talk to them and I would tell them that I was Australian, and I would tell them about Australia and things like that. Mainly so that I wouldn't have to recommend whiskey to them, because I don't know anything about whiskey.
Yeah, well, you can message my dad if you need any tips.
But if we had Scottish guests come in, I would be like, oh, I'm from Perth. And I would tell them, you know, about, you know, my Scottish side instead. And then they would always kind of query the accent, and I would explain that I've, you know, spent a lot of time in Australia as well. But yeah, like I don't really think it was so much of an identity thing for me when I was younger. Mm-hmm. It was just that I really missed my friends and my family, and I guess like the way that life was when I was a kid as well, because it always like changes when you're growing up. And mm-hmm. I think like I had like a really, really nice like upbringing in Scotland. I think like growing up in the village and having so much kind of like outdoor learning and
play-based
learning, and like I just remember so much of it just in like such a really lovely way. So I think that was what was harder for me.
And I think it is kind of nice and comforting, although when you look back on it sometimes you realize kind of the gaps in your knowledge of the world, being in like the insular community. Mm-hmm. But I think there is something kind of comforting about a village compared to anywhere else that I definitely think for me is kind of why I love going home, because I can get back to that. But I also have had to like grow up and take myself out of that and be like, oh, that was kind of like a small world view.
Yeah, definitely.
But sometimes I think it is nice, it's comforting mm-hmm. to be from a place where everyone knows everyone. Sometimes it's not comforting, sometimes it's a little annoying, but like where everyone knows everyone, it's almost like if something happened, mm-hmm. you would always know that there was people who would be like there, the people that would kind of pitch in and help your family out and things like that. Whereas like in a city, I don't know if you ever get the same experience.
My friend has this theory kind of that when you're in small towns and you're walking down the street, everyone that you see will like smile at you and say hello and ask how you're going. And you just don't get that in cities because there's just too many people for everyone to kind of care about in a way. So people, I think, just focus more on themselves. And it's not to say that people in cities are like selfish or like don't care about other people.
It's
but
just
I think
a different
like
environment,
that
isn't
sense
it?
Of community.
To be fair, that is though a thing I do like about Edinburgh is like it feels kind of more like a village than a city sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I do kind of get that. I do think I do sometimes still get the city atmosphere, and I think it's funny that I lived in a village my whole life and then moved to a city, mm-hmm. and I can't imagine living in a village, and I think it is one of those things of, like, you always want the opposite of what you had.
Yeah.
But then I also do think a lot of the time when I walk around Edinburgh, people smile at you and, like, say good morning, or if, like, you're on a walk, especially, like, right. in the area I live in.
Yeah.
There's kind of an area where I go for runs and people go for dog walks, and often everyone kind of says hi and stuff. And I think that for me was something that made Edinburgh stick out as a place I could live in.
Yeah.
Because I was like, although this is a city, and I think there was probably the family ties help, but although this is a city, it has that kind of small town feel that I need. Whereas that when I lived in, like, Toronto for a little while, I found that incredibly difficult,
uh-huh.
because that was that city where, like, you're lucky if anyone, well, no one's in, but your eyes were covered because it was so cold, but, like, but it was like no one was really, like, communicating, and it was like you could walk past, like, you could be walking around the city all day and not say one word,
yeah.
and or maybe unless you went to, like, a cafe, and then even then it was very kind of small chats. Whereas I think that's something I've always loved about, I don't know if it is an Edinburgh thing or if it is just a Scotland thing, because I do get that a lot from people who come here. They always say, God, like, everyone's so friendly here. Uh-huh. And I think we just kind of like to chat as a nation. Mm-hmm. Like, we're a nation that enjoys, like, a small talk chat, like in the cafe or, like, at the bus stop.
Yeah.
Like, I know some people hate that, but I think as a country, we seem to be a country that quite enjoys that. Like, I love, not always, but I quite enjoy a chat, like, at the bus stop. I literally had a man yeah. once give me a poem from his bag that he'd been writing, this old man, because we started chatting about poetry, and he was like, oh, I actually write my own poetry. And I was like, that's this would so never sweet. Happen in, like, London or Toronto. So I think that's something that's really interesting about this being a capital, is because we are a smaller nation. I think there's kind of a different camaraderie, perhaps. And I also, I think it probably does have something to do, like, with the way that we are presented to the rest of the world. It probably is that thing of, like, an understanding that we have. So it is an interesting concept. So when you decided to come back here, so obviously now you've been living here for a bit, what was that kind of like? When did you decide to move and be like, oh, I want to live or come to Scotland for a year or two and work and things like that? How did you come to that decision?
Well, I think it was really a combination of things. Obviously, through like all the travel bans that were going on during the pandemic, there was, like, Western Australia in particular was really quite, like, strict with that. So basically, if I had have left, I wouldn't have been able to come back for, you know, a really long time until the borders opened. But when that all sort of relaxed and the borders did open back up, I hadn't seen my grandparents and my family and my friends here for, like, 5 years, really. So it was just, like, when the borders opened up and I knew that I'd be able to get back home if I needed to, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to Scotland. And I just booked a one-way ticket, and I really had, like, no idea how long I was going to be here for. It was just sort of, I just wanted to get out and travel again and see people that I hadn't seen for a long time. And then it just so ended up that when I came over here, I just really was happy and really enjoying myself, and then I met my partner who I live with now, so that's that was also an unexpected kind of turn. So so it wasn't really like a, you know, decision that I was just gonna move back to Scotland. I just was ready to, you know, get out of Australia for a little bit and see my family again.
And how was that? Obviously you were here in winter for a while, and obviously Australian winter and Scottish winter could not be, like, more different if they tried. So how was that experience? Because obviously you had probably become quite accustomed, especially your body, to, like, living in a warmer climate. And then obviously the winters here, especially this year, have been very, very cold, especially this month, to be fair, last couple of weeks have been Baltic, which, for people listening, if they don't know, just means cold in Scottish. So what was that kind of like? Was that a shock to your system?
I think a little bit, but I guess because I didn't just come over in winter, in, like, the dead of winter, from, you know, like, an Australian summer into winter. I came over in May, so it was...
So you kind of had time to...
Yeah, like, I've been here as it's gradually gotten colder, so I've kind of had time to, you know, like, buy warmer winter clothes. And, like, for Christmas, like, I just got so many, like, thermal leggings and socks and tops and jackets and everything for my family, because I've been so worried that I'm just going to get hypothermia or something. And so I think I've, like, handled it fine. Like, sometimes I do feel cold, but it's not really, like, as bad as I would have expected. And the other day, like, I stepped out of the house and it was 4 degrees. And this was after that, like, really cold snap where it's
yes.
really heavily. And it was 4 degrees. And I walked outside and I was like, oh, my God, it's warm today. And then I was like, what did you say? Like, I can't even imagine what it would be like if it was 4 degrees in Australia.
Yeah, the whole country would, like, shut down.
Yeah. So, yeah, but, no, I've been enjoying it. I think the only thing is, like, I do feel like my skin and my hair have kind of, like, suffered a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And the water change will be, like...
I suppose so, yeah, that as well. And, yes, like, I've had, like, eczema flare-ups that I haven't really had to deal with for a really long time. And my hair's been, like, damaged, I think, from the cold as well. So that's, you know, like, minor issues, but it's kind of a pain.
But it is something that is interesting because I think people don't really think about it. Because I think it does play a part in even, like, the water that's in the shower is different and, like, your uh-huh. body gets used to that.
Yeah.
And then when you move somewhere, it changes and then it's like, oh, like, this was not part of the plan.
Yeah.
But so did you spent Christmas here, right?
I did, yeah.
So was this your first Christmas without your family, or have you had them, like, have you had Christmases without, like, as in, like, your household family? So, like, your parents yeah. and your siblings, is this your first?
Well, I've done it once before because okay. I think in 2015 I was here for Christmas.
Okay.
And I stayed with my grandparents and my auntie and my cousins then yeah. as well. So basically the same as what, yeah, it's last Christmas. But, you know, it is kind of hard, like, especially I think, like, my mum and me, we're normally, like, kind of, like, the most Christmassy people in the house.
Yeah.
The ones, like, putting up the tree together and drinking Baileys and putting Christmas movies on. So I think probably we've both, like, struggled a little bit with that, like, this year that I wasn't there to kind of do all of that with her. And at the time as well, I was working in a hotel, so I wasn't even with my family literally until, like, Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really get to do all the Christmas kind of, like, warm-up stuff, like, you know, decorating a tree and watching
yeah.
movies and stuff with family. So yeah, it was, like, a little bit of a strange Christmas. And I think as well, because it was so cold on Christmas, that it's something that feels kind of weird to me now. Like, normally that's one of the hottest days of the year and would be by the pool or maybe even at the beach and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, definitely different.
And then in Australia, did you have Christmas just the five of you, or would you have other people come around? Was it quite a, like, social event, or was it just kind of, like, with your family, or would you guys, like, meet up with friends to go to the beach, or what was kind of, like, your traditions?
Well, we usually would just do Christmas, just, like, the five of us.
Mm-hmm.
But then we had this thing that we called Boxing Day Christmas with these really good family friends of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that we knew them is when we first moved over, my little brother was in a class with their eldest child, and then they have a younger son as well. So the four of them, the five of us, would do, like, a Christmas, usually the day after Christmas.
Yeah.
And we would just do, like, a big Secret Santa instead of buying everybody a present each. And we would always change. It was so nice. Like, we would all bring, like, you know, we would contribute different foods and stuff, and sometimes there would be themes. But with the Secret Santa as well, sometimes there would be rules. So, like, one year we had to get everything from, like, a charity shop.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was so much fun. Like, that was a really good tradition that we had, and they still have. I just wasn't here for it this year.
No, that's cool. Yeah, because we've always just done Christmas. Well, we used to be six and now we're four, but
mm-hmm.
We've always just had kind of, like, small family
yeah.
thing. And it's kind of funny, like, because I've never not had, although I've lived abroad and done all those things, I've somehow managed to wangle it that I've never not been here for Christmas.
Yeah,
which is funny because to me, it's funny, like, that it was the hottest day of the year, because to me, Christmas is, like, all about, like, my dad putting the fire on in the uh-huh. living room, yeah. like, everyone having, like, a hot chocolate or, like, getting, like, a coffee in the morning, just, like, from the kitchen, and then, like, not really leaving the house, just being, like, in your blanket all day, mm-hmm. having, like, in the last, like, 5 or 6 years, like, having the neighbor's cat around all day, yeah. and just, like, very, like, cozy. Just, like, kind of, you know, those, like, Pinterest board things of, like, people with their cozy socks on near the fire and things like that. Like, that's how I would, like, encapsulate our family Christmas. It's a very, like, cozy, quiet thing, which I think is funny because, like, I think growing up I kind of didn't – I think I did like it, but, like, growing up I was always kind of aware of, like, bigger families and the yeah. Christmases they had and the more, like – and the big traditions they had and things like that, and I never really thought about, like, the things my family did were tradition, but, like, we have the same food every year and things like that, so we do have traditions. But, like, it's yeah. funny because now I, like, couldn't imagine having a big Christmas. Like, that to me now just sounds, like, horrible. Like, I love yeah. that I have a small, cozy, quiet Christmas. I'm like, that is exactly what I need. And I think for me, it's nice because in teaching, one of the best things about teaching is, because you were saying working in a hotel, obviously you didn't get all the kind of run up to Christmas things.
Yeah.
One of the best things about teaching is like, you really get so much of the run up to Christmas things all the time with the kids. And I think that kind of is almost like my busy Christmas.
Yeah.
So then it's nice to go home and just kind of decompress and be like, okay. And then being in Edinburgh, it's like quite a good like place to be in the festive season. And people are always like up for like going to see a Christmas film, or like going ice skating, or going like to the Christmas markets, even though like overpriced and overrated, but like you just go to see you being.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because I think I always was kind of like, when I was younger, oh, I don't know if like I want something that's like a little bit more exciting. But speaking about like being cozy and things like that, because we're gonna have to round off the episode because we've been chatting for a while. What is like your Korean essential? So what is something that you like to have? If you could only have like one thing all the time, that would be like your thing to make you feel like cozy and warm inside, like what would it be at this point?
I think I have really poor circulation actually to my feet. Just a fun fact for everybody. And so I basically always have cold feet. Like right now I'm wearing these thermal socks and my feet are cold. And so for me, it's like those ridiculous giant bed socks that are like just massive and like so unnecessary and like really like stuffed with fluff. They're like the only thing that can keep my feet warm. So that's my thing. That's what I need.
Nice. You wear them to bed? You sleep in them?
Usually I like wake up with them kicked off because they get too warm at night. But I find it really hard to fall asleep if I can feel that my feet are cold. So
cold feet.
Yeah.
That's fair. See, I just can't do like socks on in bed. I don't know why. I think it's like the friction thing.
Yeah.
Makes me feel weird. But I get that. But I quite like being cold. Like I'd rather be too cold than too hot. But I think that probably is like because of where I'm from.
Yeah.
I think it's something that I'm like, because for me, it's also like when people say like, which would you rather be? I think, well, if you're too cold, there's always so much you can do to rectify that.
Yeah.
You can add like a ton of layers. Uh-huh. But if you're too hot, there's only so much you can take off.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then you run out of possibilities. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more possible to rectify. But thank you so much for coming on. It was so, so lovely. This was such a great chat.
Yeah, this has been
good. Do you want to like shout yourself out? What's your Instagram handle?
It's just my name with a dot and an underscore.
Nice. Well, I'll link it in the show notes if anyone wants to follow along on Maisie's journey of like moving from Perth to Perth and then now moving back again and having that whole experience. But thank you so much for listening, everyone. And tune in next week. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Before you go, please do leave a review and follow/subscribe wherever you're listening to us. And don't forget to check us out on our social medias. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at Fancy Up Leather, and our website will be up very soon with all our rebranding, so stay tuned for that. And that is just fancyupleather.com. Don't forget to check out our sister podcast, new episode on Monday. Just search Small Talk in Spotify to follow along with them too. Have a good week. Bye.